Fez Branded Thoughts. And why are we playing Sixpence None the Richer? There she goes. Well, Alex, as I was watching the Iowa-Minnesota game on Friday, and, you know, I may end up going on a rant. It's very possible that I go on a rant. I've already went on a rant on a couple other people already. So I want you to be aware of that. All right. As we were watching that game, not in the first half, not really much in the second half, but as we got to the final, you know, minute, final 40 seconds of regulation, and of course overtime, I couldn't help but notice one player open from three over and over and over and over and over and over again. Not only was he open from three every single play, and literally every single play, and this player we're talking about is Brandon Johnson, who, by the way, was 2 of 10 from three heading into the game against Iowa. Iowa made no adjustments and allowed him to hit 8 of 9 threes. And I mean open, and that's why we played the song. I thought, there he goes. There he goes again. There he goes again. There he goes again. There he goes again. I was calling it. You can ask my wife. I was calling it as we're watching the game. I said, there he is. Watch him right there. He's going to get the ball. He's going to shoot. What do you know? He shot it, made it every time. I mean, listen, I hate to just jump into the podcast on a rant, but this is despicable. The level of non-commit defensively at crucial times in games, we have been saying this for 3 years. Ever since the graduations of Adam Woodbury, Mike Gesell, Anthony Clemons, and Jared Utoff, the defense has been garbage. We all know that since 2017. They have made slight improvements each year. They've steadily improved. There has not been a massive jump. We've also seen the last couple of years Iowa have the ability to go into a game like they did on Tuesday against Purdue and basically play solid defense from beginning to end. The problem is they have not proven to be able to consistently play defense basically from any level. Transition, defensive rebounding, half-court sets, zone, man-to-man, nothing. They have not proven that they can do that from game to game. And what really makes me aggravated about this as a fan, okay, and I'm a fan, okay, we cover Iowa, but I'm a fan primarily. What primarily makes me aggravated about this is the fact that there was a four next to Iowa's name during this game. A four. They were number four in the country. Okay? And to have aspirations to go to the Final Four to win a national championship, you do not give up 102 points to anybody when you're number four in the country. All right? I don't care what you have to say. I don't give a rat's, you know what? What rat's crap. I don't care what happens with the other team. I don't care how hot they are, who goes off. I don't care. You are not a Final Four team if you're giving up over 100 points to your opponent. That is the bottom line. You cannot convince me otherwise. Let me give you a stat here, Alex, and you may have seen this, but in the 5 minutes of overtime plus the 37 seconds, the last 30 seconds of regulation, Iowa gave up 29 points. Let me break that down for you. So 5 minutes and 37 seconds, Iowa gave up 29 points total. That is equivalent to over 5 points a minute. Now, let me put this in perspective for you. If that defense played the entire game giving up that total, what they gave up the last 5:37 of the game, if they did that for an entire 40-minute period, they would give up over 204 points. Over 204. I mean, we're not
you're saying their defense sucks.
What?
So you're saying their defense sucks.
Okay. We're not even talking about bad. We're talking about literally garbage. Smoking garbage. Okay? And listen, I'm not abandoning this team. I'm going to keep watching this team. I hope to death they can figure this out. But when you and listen, I don't want, if anybody tries to tell me, well, there were free throws and they were trying to extend the game, that's why they scored so many. No, if you watch the game, there were players open. How many threes did Johnson and Carr knock down in the last 37 seconds in overtime combined? I mean, they literally were open, and Carr made a couple tough ones, but they were open time and time and time again. That is unacceptable, and it's the same thing that I saw in 2017. It's the same thing I saw in 18, and the same thing I saw last year. Now, granted, I give Iowa credit. Like I said earlier, they have had longer stretches where they've played consistent defense as time has gone on throughout these past couple of seasons. They have improved and had stretches where they're not doing this as consistently. The problem is you do not lose to Minnesota. I don't think you should ever. I mean, listen, I don't have a problem losing to Minnesota. During that first half, Minnesota was playing great defense. I thought this team looks like a team that probably, first of all, Minnesota's an NCAA tournament team. Let me just make that very clear. They are a good team. Minnesota's very good. I mean, they've only got one loss for a reason, and their one loss came against Illinois. They're a good team. But the problem is you don't give up 102 to Minnesota and lose. That's unacceptable. And, you know, I know Fran said that after the game. I mean, I know that's just kind of stating the obvious. I love it when people try to give me the, well, Joe Toussaint missed two free throws and C.J. Frederick missed a couple of free throws late. My God. I mean, seriously, we're really going to nitpick about two free throws that a kid misses when he's the only guy on the floor at times playing defense. And we're really going to nitpick on Joe Toussaint for missing a couple of free throws late when they should have fouled Marcus Carr and not allowed a three-pointer to go up in the first place with 6 seconds to go in the game. How do you not foul? Listen, this game is completely on Fran McCaffrey.
That's what I was just going to say. I don't think, I mean, I have a problem with the free throw situation, but it's not with Toussaint, it's with Fran.
Well, Toussaint's a good free throw shooter. I don't have a problem with him shooting the free throws. I mean, guys
what
miss. It happens. Huh?
What is his percentage?
I think he shot low. I think he's closer to 70 this year, but I think last year he was around 80 the whole year. So, I have no, and remember, he just missed, he made swish two free throws right prior to those misses on Friday. So I don't have a problem with it. Yeah, you'd prefer Bohannon, but I'd rather Toussaint than Connor, and Connor passed it to, Connor has struggled from the line this year. So
that's
I would
what
rather
I was gonna say, you know, having him and Connor out there, I wasn't really aware of Toussaint's free throw percentage, but I assumed it wasn't very good. But
well, like I said,
it was
over 80% last year. I'd say that's excellent. But he's been down a little bit this year. But again, he hasn't shot a whole lot. So I don't have a problem with it. And he, listen, I don't know how we, there's nothing else to break down. He missed two free throws. You got to get over it. There's no reason for, there is no reason why you let Marcus Carr get a three in the air. How do you do that? How do you allow Marcus Carr to get a shot off?
Yeah, I mean,
you don't do it. Yeah, you foul him at half court. There were 6 seconds. It was under 6 seconds when the shot went through the rim. I mean, you do not let that three have any chance of going in. That's coaching. It's not on Joe Toussaint, the guy who didn't foul. It's on the coaches because obviously they weren't told to foul. And believe me, if Fran told Joe to foul and Joe didn't foul, we would have heard about it because Fran would have ripped into him. And I'm not saying Fran's a player's coach, but I guarantee you Fran would have been pissed. We would have known it and we would have seen it. He was not pissed with Joe's defense on that play. As far as, you know, he definitely was not pissed with the concept that they didn't foul because I don't think he ever relayed that to his guys. And that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable. That is not a Final Four coaching move. That's just not. You cannot do that. And, you know, the issue with this game on Friday was it did not feel like 2020 Iowa basketball. It felt like 2017-2018 basketball. Maybe 2019, but even last year, you know, I think we had a little bit higher expectations because guys were older. It felt like 17 and 18. Would you agree with that? Just games where they just can't – just have no way. Listen, we felt this against Gonzaga, but Gonzaga's number one in the country, and I think we just kind of said, well, Gonzaga's Gonzaga. But they did it against Minnesota. It's unacceptable in every way.
And Gonzaga hit hard shots, too. They weren't just wide open all the time. They played really well.
I mean, Iowa didn't play good defense in that game either. You don't give up 99 and claim you played good defense. I mean, it wasn't good in either game, but Gonzaga also is an elite offensive team. Minnesota is not elite offensively. They've got good weapons. I mean, Marcus Carr is one of the best players in the Big Ten. And I said that going into the game. I said, nobody's talking about, at least people here in Iowa, we're not talking about how dangerous Marcus Carr is. And once again, here you have another point guard that Jordan Bohannon just simply cannot defend. And I continue to say this. You know, people were dogging on Toussaint after the game. I saw people on Twitter dogging on Toussaint for racking up four fouls in 12 minutes. You know why he's racking up four fouls? Two reasons. The refereeing was garbage in this game. It was hot garbage, A. And B, he's the only guy trying. I mean, he's the only guy being aggressive. I mean, you watch the game. You're going to sit here and tell me that, well, he got four fouls. He needs to be on the bench. I mean, give me a break. Okay? Jordan Bohannon does not have the ability to defend a guy like Marcus Carr. He doesn't have the ability to defend a guy like Jalen Suggs. He's not going to be able to defend Rocket Watts at Michigan State. He's not going to be able to defend the guy. Rutgers is incredibly athletic, and Iowa gets them on Saturday. Okay? He's not going to be able to defend, you know, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, he is, we've talked about it, he is pretty inept defensively. Now, I've seen him trying harder. I don't know if you've noticed this. I've seen him trying harder, especially in the zone. He seems to really be trying defensively. He's just not capable, unfortunately. From a physical standpoint, he's not capable of being a lockdown defender. I've said it before, I believe he's a starter if he's making threes. And I don't think you pull the plug on him yet because he's not making threes. But I also believe you've got to start having that conversation. How long do you wait in this process? This is my stance on how long do you wait in this process before you say, look, Joe Toussaint deserves to start, Jordan. I don't care if you're a fifth-year senior. How long does Fran wait? Because it's sort of like the Spencer Petras discussion. He was struggling, he was struggling, he was struggling. There's got to be a clock in a coach's mind that says, look, we've given this enough time to let him shoot his way or throw his way out of this slump. Now, Spencer Petras, you know, Kirk was loyal to him, and by the time we got to game number 7 and game number 8, Spencer played pretty well, at least in the second halves of those games, and they did win 6 straight. But we've given Jordan Bohannon how long now? I mean, we're, what, 8 games into the season? And he's not making threes. So again, I go back to this, and people hate – a certain segment of the fan base that hates hearing this because they love Jordan Bohannon, and that's fine. He's one of the greatest shooters in Iowa history. I get it. And I don't know if it's his surgeries that are throwing off his stroke. I have no idea. But they hate hearing me say this, but this is the reality of it. If Jordan's not making threes, and he's turning the ball over at a higher rate than he ever has, he is not an asset on the court. He's not.
He's not, in my opinion, if he can't shoot, he's not a Division I player. Like, he shouldn't even be on the bench of most collegiate teams.
Well, that's fine. But you take, but again, I can play devil's advocate on that and say, and take a guy's best. I mean, Joe Toussaint, say, take away Joe Toussaint's quickness. He's probably not a Division I player. I mean, I understand Bohannon brings a distinct skill set to the table. The problem when you're a shooter, though, is if you're not on, you can be very much a liability if you're not a good defender. And
I think, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a different thing because quickness is something that is never going to go away unless you're injured. But
that's what I'm saying. Shooting, yeah, that's shooting exactly can go right. Cold. Right. But see, we've never seen this though out of Jordan. You can go cold from game to game, and you just accept that. But Jordan Bohannon is one of the best 3-point shooters, probably the best one ever to play at Iowa. But he's
well,
not
the main thing I'm saying, I'm not really talking so much about that. I'm saying that I think there are situations where he can't be on the floor, even if he's shooting as well as he does, because you're just going to be trading baskets. And okay, I just don't think that's
fine.
A good
but I'm
pattern.
Saying, but as we've had this debate before, I am not an advocate for putting him on the bench to start games unless you're going to keep it that way. You do not switch in and out. You do not say, well, Jordan, you're starting today. Joe, you're starting. That's not how you coach a basketball team. So again, you have to commit. It's either Jordan or it's Joe. Okay. And listen, on so far, Jordan is the starter, but I think Joe is making a case to be the starter, is he not? With the way he's playing, because here's the deal: if Jordan's not making threes, Joe Toussaint is shooting at probably just a higher level as Jordan. I mean, he's certainly shooting at a higher percentage from inside the arc, and you know, Joe just doesn't shoot a whole lot of threes, but I just don't know what Jordan Bohannon brings to the table if he's not making threes. But I also here's the deal. This is the reason why you also don't want to take Jordan out unless you're totally sure you want to go with Joe. You take Jordan out of the game, just like taking Spencer Petras out of the game at quarterback. It's the same principle when you're taking out your starting point guard. That's going to mess with the kid's head. And do you want to do that at this point? And are you absolutely sure? And I'm sure that's the battle Fran's having, because you know, you take him out of the game, you know, I don't know if you're able to get back. Now, I could also say, I think there's a chance that Joe starting would be the motivation Jordan needs to be to figure out what's going on. Not that he doesn't already have motivation. I'm sure he's frustrated with himself because he's not playing good basketball. He knows it. Everybody knows it. But maybe that would be the motivation and the push that Jordan Bohannon needs to be able to respond and start shooting the ball better, put a little fire under him. So, but again, regardless of that, this is not a Jordan Bohannon problem. I want to make that clear. This is an Iowa basketball problem. The fact that Iowa is so sporadically inept on the defensive end. Okay. Minnesota wasn't hitting Iowa with a ton of transition points on Saturday. What happened was Iowa simply couldn't defend in the half court. And when you don't defend in the half court, what do you get? You got wide open threes out of the zone. Did Iowa switch up the defense? No, they kept with the zone. Did they face guard Johnson? No, they didn't. They just continued to let him shoot in the same spot on the floor over and over and over and over and over and over again. And there's no excuse for it. It's just, you know, people don't like hearing the word unacceptable from a fan. It's unacceptable from I can look from the outside and say this should be unacceptable from an Iowa basketball perspective, what we saw on Friday night.
Well, it certainly should be for this year. I mean, this is the year that you have to, you know, be at your best. It's not that you can't lose games, but to lose games like that where you basically, you know, I mean, Iowa wasn't playing great on offense at the beginning, but they picked it up and they still lost, you know, even though they played decent on offense the rest of the game. So, I mean, if that happens against Minnesota, you know, that's big trouble going down the road against bigger teams. And there's just this year, there's just such a little margin of error, because even if you win a game like yesterday, if you don't play well, like even if Toussaint makes free throws or whatever, it doesn't really change anything. I mean, the same problem is still there, so maybe it's best that they lost that.
Well, but let's be honest, though. If you look at that game, I told you, it's 29 points in overtime in the last 37 seconds. If Iowa does close the door and doesn't lose in regulation and doesn't give up all those points in overtime, I think we're looking at this game completely differently.
Right, and because you think that would be a good thing?
Well, I don't know how I mean, I don't know what this is going to do to this team. I said it the night it happened. I no longer believe that Iowa can fix this. I don't. I don't believe that Iowa can fix the problems. And the reason I don't believe Iowa can fix the problems, or maybe I shouldn't say can, I don't believe they will. Because I've been saying this exact same thing for 3 years now. It's the exact same thing. So if it hasn't been fixed by now, when there was so much hype around this team being a top five team and all we've heard about is defense, defense, defense. And if it's not fixed now, what would tell you that they're going to fix it? What indication do you have that Iowa is going to fix this? To me, there is none. And so I do not believe that Iowa will fix this. I hope to God they do, because it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace for the team, and not even the fans. I mean, the players are the ones that are going to lose out if Iowa doesn't live up to its potential. The players are the ones, you know, they've got incredible talent offensively. They've got great, they run great sets offensively. I think they've got a good coach. Fran McCaffrey, I think, is a great offensive coach, but he's failing on the defensive end miserably right now. And he's been failing miserably for 3 years. And that's just a fact of the matter. So I don't believe that Iowa will fix this. I hope they do. But I thought, you know, I kind of thought that after the Gonzaga performance, I thought, well, we thought it was going to be fixed heading into the season, or we wanted to think it was going to be fixed heading into the season. It wasn't totally. They got exposed by a really good team. But I thought, okay, they'll fix it now. And then we see how they play against Purdue. And we thought, okay, they've got it under control. And then they come out and do this the last 5:44. That was like the final straw for me to say, this ain't going nowhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely think they can fix it as far as if they will. I think they really have to. I mean, this is, you know, well, just for the sake of
losing,
I think they have to.
Second round. I mean, they won't live up to their potential. I mean, well, they don't have to do anything.
If Luka plays as well as he did last year throughout the season, which I think he will because
he is
a workhorse, that's going to look pretty bad. The fact that he came back just for that purpose and they weren't able to build a team around him but assemble what the pieces they have to, you know, make his last year a competitive year when they had probably the best outlook we've ever had. And, you know, as Iowa basketball fans. So, you know, I think there is a lot at stake here. Obviously Fran's job or anything isn't on the line if your team makes the tournament, et cetera. But, you know, it doesn't look good, especially to a fan who, you know, really follows a lot. If you're an outsider and you don't follow Iowa basketball and they, you know, make it into the first couple rounds of the tournament or whatever, you know, you're thinking, oh, they got a decent team. Obviously the coach isn't the problem, but if you're a fan and you've been seeing the same issues for years and years, and you know that the team is better than this, it looks pretty bad. So I think there is more motivation. I think there's got to be more motivation this year to take more drastic measures to fix it. There is a lot more at stake.
I mean, why weren't these measures taken? Were the measures not taken prior? That's what I'm saying. Like, to say, well, now they got to take drastic measures. God, the measure should have been taken months ago. I just don't believe that they just weren't taken and now they're going to be taken.
Well, I mean, I think that they've shown enough where they do play decent games, but on defense, but it seems like they get worn down. I'm not sure if that's a result of so much zone where guys are having to constantly think. I know, you know, it's got to be stressful to play zone so much because you're having to constantly think of where you're supposed to be in rotations. I don't know if it's a mentally draining thing or what, but they seem to be able to bring it together sometimes, and then they just fall flat, and they're just constantly late. They're late on rotations. They're slow on everything. Their closeouts are garbage. And so I'm not sure if that, you know, has a factor, and that comes back to if you can't guard at certain positions, you kind of are forced, your hand is forced. So
I don't believe I do not believe that this team is not talented enough to play man-to-man defense better than they do. I don't believe that at all. And I also don't believe, listen, talent, good offense, elite offense comes down to a lot of talent and execution. Elite defense comes down to a lot of effort and execution. Offense is much more about talent. Defense is much more about effort. And you have to be athletic, I mean, to a degree. You have to be able to communicate and execute. The problem is this team doesn't do any of that. But it's just so sad because there are some teams that just don't have it offensively. They just don't have it. And there's really nothing you can do. If a guy's not a good shooter, a guy doesn't have the speed to get to the basket, you know, guys doesn't have the physical skills or the footwork skills down the post, then, you know, fine. But defensively, it comes down to effort. And that's what's frustrating is you see so much potential in this team, but how do you give up 29 points in 5.5 minutes? I mean, that's just, like I said, I mean, that's 5 points over five a minute. That's insane. You're lucky to get two possessions in a minute. I mean, for you know, two possessions for one team in a minute. So the fact that they give up over five a minute is obscene. It's not even normal. It's obscene. And look, they were up by seven. They were up by seven with 37 seconds left. Okay. And they blew the game. Now I get, you know, free throws were missed, but they gave up a step back three to Carr, which was a travel. They didn't call it. They gave up the three that Toussaint defended at the end. They also stopped the clock with a stupid foul, and Minnesota made two free throws. And besides turn the ball over, Iowa committed every cardinal sin you can commit in a late game situation when you hold the lead. Didn't foul on the three, missed free throws, didn't get the ball to your best free throw shooter, stopped the clock unnecessarily. So, I don't, like I said, I hope that Iowa figures this out. Do I think they can? I do. I said earlier, I don't think they can. I absolutely think they can, because it's not a matter of talent. I don't believe it's a matter of talent. This team can be serviceable defensively, and they can be serviceable consistently. They can be. Okay, lots of teams do it with little to no athleticism. They are serviced. Listen, Todd Licklider's teams were oftentimes serviceable defensively. I hate to compare Fran McCaffrey to Todd Licklider. Todd Licklider's teams were inept offensively. But the point is, they were serviceable defensively. And the fact that Fran can't seem to figure this out is very concerning. And I've been saying this for a while, but it's very concerning. And so again, they lose what was the final score? 102-95. I mean, just hideous. And Minnesota is going to be a top 25 team on Monday. But you know who also is going to be a top 25 team on Monday? Northwestern. Northwestern is 3-0 in the Big Ten. Talk about a team nobody expected. I mean, everybody thought the Big Ten was going to be great this year, which it is. But Northwestern has beaten Michigan State, Indiana, and Ohio State. They are atop the Big Ten at 3-0, and they will be ranked. They're 3-0 for the first time since, I think, like 1964 or something. I mean, just insane. And Iowa gets them next in Iowa City. And here's what I'll say, Alex. My prediction for that game, I'll just give it to everybody now. One of two things is going to happen. Either Iowa is going to be the same old Iowa, the same old team that has spurts where they just cannot defend, or they're going to play like they did against Purdue and lock them down, and I think they could actually dominate the game. I really do. Even though Northwestern has shown they're pretty darn good this year, I think Iowa can lock them down, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do. My big question is, okay, they locked down Northwestern, but how do they play against Rutgers on Saturday? How do they play against Maryland the game after? I mean, and so forth. What are your thoughts on this next game against Northwestern Tuesday night?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a, I don't know if you call it a gauntlet, but it's where you don't get a break here. And, it's going to be very telling. If they don't turn it around, I could see the same type of thing happening. I'm not saying they're going to lose again, but you don't want this game to be a repeat on defense. Obviously, I think Iowa definitely didn't play their best game on offense. But, Luka didn't play.
Luka played probably 95 points.
They did, and, that's the thing. Is I still don't think they played to their potential on offense, especially Luka. He had a lot of just missed shots where he just doesn't usually miss. And
Especially
in the first half. But so, this game is really... I don't know what to say other than I think that I would like to see Toussaint probably start. I mean, I know you don't want to see him go back and forth, and that's fine, but I think they can't keep going with this. As long as I think you probably just have to make a decision and just go with Joe, and if you have a team that you're playing that doesn't have as strong a guard play, like the last two games they've lost, to both have elite guards they're having to play. And if you have a team that doesn't have, those elite guards, maybe you still start Joe, but you play more of Bohannon.
You can move Bohannon off the point, and you can play him at the two, which I think Iowa's better with him at the two anyways. The problem is then you don't have room for Wieskamp and Frederick unless you go really small and play Wieskamp at the four.
Yeah, I'm not talking about moving him in the lineup. I'm talking about benching him.
Well, no, you are not going to bench Bohannon for over 20 minutes in a game. You're just not. That's just insane to think that they would even do that.
Well, I'm saying to start at least.
Well, starter. Yeah. Like I said, I'm not opposed to the idea of Joe starting, but if Fran's going to do that, Fran needs to be absolutely sure that Joe is the guy the rest of the year in the starting lineup. And I think it's a big deal. I think it's a bigger deal than we make it out to be. And, you know, I was not going to be number four. I'll tell you that come Monday. I would be surprised to see them stay in the top eight, honestly. I could see them being the top 10. I don't think they'll be top eight. I'd have to look at the rest of the poll. Rutgers, like I said, I mean, the Big Ten is just ridiculous. How many good teams? I mean, Michigan hasn't lost yet. Wisconsin looks really good. They're 2-0 in the Big Ten now. Northwestern's 3-0 in the Big Ten. I think Indiana's better than their record shows. They've got Trace Jackson Davis, who's been a star this year. And, you know, I mentioned Rutgers. Maryland is not Maryland, so they're probably one of the worst teams in the Big Ten, and yet it's Maryland, and they still got tons of talent with Wiggins. And it's just going to be every single night, and Fran's not exaggerating when he says that. It's every single night it's going to be difficult. And so I'm not surprised they lost to Minnesota. I said before the week started, I said I could see Iowa losing one or both of those games. They did beat Purdue, give them credit. Won that game. It was an impressive way they won, because they won in a defensive battle. But if you look back at last year, Alex, there were games where Iowa, they did the same thing. They'd hold somebody to 60 points, and then they'd give up 100. It was the same deal last year. I guess that's the big thing. I'm not seeing improvement, significant improvement defensively from last year at all. Okay, I mean, I've seen improvement over the past 2 or 3 years. I'm not seeing improvement so far this year.
And that's what makes me wonder if they are getting worn down mentally.
How do you get worn down mentally when the season just started?
I just think it, you know, even playing a full game the way they play, having to do so much thinking on the floor, I think you start stringing games together, and maybe they just have a lax, you know, they just have a down game mentally. That's the only thing I think of.
That's
like
not,
you said,
that's not how champions win.
Well, I think, though, that it may be set up to fail. I mean, yeah, obviously you want your guys to be at the top of their game all the time, but these are college kids, you know, they're not pros. And if you set them up to fail, I don't know. If they take a little bit more responsibility away from the players having to think so much throughout the game, maybe that'll help. I don't know. I think with Toussaint in the lineup, I think that's definitely doable. They don't really have much for weakness. Depending on the lineup, they don't really have any weaknesses man-to-man in that situation. So maybe that takes some of the load off of them having to think so much. And, you know, the margins are so thin when you're rotating and closing out on guys. If you're a little bit late and a team gets hot, it can become a pretty slippery slope, and they start, you know, just doing the same thing over and over, knocking down shots. Maybe you can stem the tide of that by just changing the way the defense is having to work. It's one thing that I think, to you talk about effort on defense, there's definitely the physical effort part, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily the problem.
I mean, I think it's a problem when you see guys that are not rotating, and you see closeouts where you're not hand high. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous when you close out as weakly as Iowa closes out time and time and time again. And it's also coaching, by not changing things. When a guy's made 5 of 6, then he makes 6 of 7, then 7 of 8, then 8 of 9, and you don't change a darn thing. That's coaching.
Yeah. I mean, just from the eye test, to be honest, I haven't felt, I think there has been, especially in transition, there's definitely been some lack of effort stuff, but to me, it hasn't been egregious, and I don't think it's enough to explain their losses. And it just makes me wonder if it's more of a mental aspect. But yeah, we'll just have to see.
Another guy that did this to Iowa a couple of years ago was Justin Arnes at Ohio State. Same deal. Never did anything offensively. Plays Iowa, gets like 35, gets like 10 threes. I mean, this is not, you know, everybody, well, you know, Fran did say the defense was unacceptable. I give him credit for saying it, I guess. But he also said after the game, well, they had to make them, and they give them credit, they made them. I mean, come on. Come on. These are collegiate players. These are collegiate basketball players. What are you asking for if you leave a guy open time and time and time again? Justin Arnes did the same thing. Trash against everybody else. plays against Iowa, becomes a star. It's not a coincidence that it happens against Iowa. So yeah, I mean, when people say, oh, the guy just got hot. Oh, give me a break. The guy just got hot.
Connor's a good shooter if he's left open that much. Like, he could probably
shoot. Sure, anybody would be a good shooter. That's what I'm saying. Anybody would be a good shooter. I mean, I could probably make, 30 to 40% if I'm wide open, maybe. I'm feeling a good night. I mean, it's not like he's the only guy they left open. I mean, I can't tell you how many times Kalscher was open. Carr found himself open. Kalscher found himself. Willis found himself. I mean, it was ridiculous. But this is what we get with the Iowa defense. So I'm in a wait and see right now. I'm definitely in a hold because it's too early to be talking about, a loss hurting them, because there's going to be lots of losses. But you looked at the early part of the schedule, Alex, and you had to say, well, Purdue is an unranked team. Although they're good, they're unranked. Minnesota, although they're good, they're unranked. Northwestern, although they're good, they're unranked. Thought, okay, they can start 3-0 heading into that Rutgers game, and they've already dropped one. And you're going to get into a section of the schedule later. I mean, let's take a look at this schedule. You get Rutgers Saturday, you get at Maryland, and then home against Minnesota. And then you really begin a gauntlet. You get Michigan State. You're at another top 25 Northwestern team. You get Indiana, Nebraska, at Illinois, home against Ohio State, at Indiana, home against Rutgers, at Michigan State, at Wisconsin, at Penn State, or excuse me, home against Penn State, at Ohio State, at Michigan, home Wisconsin. That's the schedule. And I'm just saying, it's not going to get any easier. It's not going to get any easier. Now, I do think Iowa, if I had to predict, I think Iowa will beat Minnesota handily when they play them at home here in a couple of weeks. Would you agree with that?
I would think so. I mean, if I was betting, I'd say that. But, I mean, if they make the same mistakes, it could be another close game.
We got to wait and see. This game on Tuesday, let's see here. So, Alex, the next three games are not on BTN. So how are you going to watch these games?
I'll have to figure it out. What are they on?
See, the game on Tuesday is FS1. Game on January 2nd is ESPN2. And the Maryland game is also ESPN2. And then the Big Ten Network, FS1, Big Ten Network, FS1, Big Ten Network, FS1, ESPN, Fox, Big Ten, Fox, ESPN, FS1. Anyways. So Iowa Northwestern, 8:07 p.m. Iowa time on Tuesday. I think it's a must-have game. Northwestern's going to be feeling great. Certainly they're going to be ranked tomorrow. I could see them being in the top 20 even. We will see. Alex, the other news that we got today, we got a couple days ago, we got word that Amir Smith-Marset was declaring for the draft, so he will not return for an extra year. Brandon Smith announced the same thing today, and then just hours before we started recording the show, Missouri announced that due to COVID-19 positives that they began to have that were actually from weeks prior their last game of the season, due to those COVID-19 tests coming back positive, Missouri is pulling out of the Music City Bowl, and Kirk Ferentz has said that the season's over. They're not going to be rescheduling someone, and that's that. So Iowa wins six straight games and has their last two games canceled. How disappointed are you in how this season finished from a scheduling standpoint? Obviously, you can't be disappointed in the guys' efforts, six straight wins, but how disappointed are you with this being the way the season ends and it not being Iowa's fault from a transmittal standpoint?
It's just a total disaster. I mean, total disaster, not just with the Iowa, it's with a lot of other teams, them having to, Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, all were, terribly hurt. And Iowa pretty much slipped under the radar as far as COVID and pretty much did that the whole season as far as, our own lack of positive tests. But then Iowa still gets screwed because the team they play, pulls out. So it's just a total disaster. I mean, what is this season going to look like when you look back in history books, when you see who won what? I mean, nobody's gonna give that any credit. They talk about having an asterisk next to certain championships. That's not even a strong enough word to describe what this season's gonna look like. in history books. It just doesn't even matter anymore. That's my opinion.
I don't agree with that because I think these kids fought for six straight wins. And
yeah, you know, that's the point.
Well, but they still went 6-2. I mean, they didn't listen. The reason they didn't win the West is because they lost. It was not because of COVID. The reason they didn't win the West is because they lost to Northwestern.
Yeah, I have an opinion about that too, and I think it was more due to COVID than anything.
How can you say it's due to COVID? They lost the game.
Well, they
mathematically, that's the reason they didn't win it.
Here's my opinion on why they lost, because it's my opinion that Iowa relies more on player development than any other team or most other teams. You'd probably agree with that. And I think having the lack of knowing what was going to happen, I think hurt Iowa more because they can't rely on talent like these other teams do. I'm not saying that Northwestern.
Have you not seen how Iowa has played against Purdue and Northwestern for the past, I don't know, 10 years? They lose to these teams routinely.
Well, they tend to lose to the teams that they need to win against.
They lose to Northwestern and Purdue. Those two teams. And look back at the schedules.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't think you can make that claim. I understand the claim. And yeah, development's important, and they would have liked to have had a couple non-conference games, but they lose to Northwestern and Purdue almost every year, it seems like.
That may be true, but I'm not sure how much stock to put in that, because you know every year's teams are different. And you know, we saw how close they were. It's not like they're destined to lose these games. I think that if they
doesn't mean they're destined, but they've got a coach that knows how to beat Iowa. That's the bottom line. Those teams do.
Well, I still think that like if you had a regular, more typical amount of time to prepare, I feel like that result would have been different. And maybe that's just being a homer or whatever, but I feel like it would be different. I think Iowa benefits more from that than any other team. We saw that. I mean, I'm sure you can admit that we saw the difference between those first couple games, and then they win six. They reel off six straight. I mean, they played totally different in those two games. They were not the same.
Well, I don't. Honestly, you watch that second game back. My biggest takeaway was not that they played differently. They made Petras throw the ball 51 times. That's coaching. I mean, that's just coaching. I think if they had ran the ball 50 times, they would have won.
Yeah,
that they were up 17-0 and ran the ball 51 times, I think that's why they won. Notice starting in game three, they ran the ball nonstop, and that's why they won, because they had a dominant offensive line this year. But as far as the losses to Northwestern, you got to remember Northwestern is also a developmental program, maybe more developmental than Iowa is. I mean, they are very, very developmental. So you could argue that they were maybe at an even more disadvantage than Iowa was heading into that game and still managed. And again, that wasn't the first game. That was the second game. And Iowa, it's not like Iowa played badly in the Purdue game. The problem with the Purdue game is they committed stupid penalties and fumbled the ball. And so it didn't look like from a physical standpoint they were behind the curve. And
well, what was Ferentz's quote from just before the season started? I can't remember what he said, but it was something about he seemed, and I think we both thought maybe he was just, you know, being politically correct type thing, but he seemed like he was very worried about his players' readiness.
Oh, but whose fault is that? Like I said, Pat Fitzgerald, you can't blame COVID. Pat Fitzgerald was in the same boat. They weren't getting any more time than Iowa was to prepare for that game.
It could be. Like I said, well, it could be.
It is.
Well, we don't know their situation as much. Maybe, you know, I don't know if Pat Fitzgerald said anything. Maybe they treated the whole situation differently. I'm not sure that affects every team.
Then that comes down to coaching, though, if they treated it differently. We're talking about what COVID limited. And COVID limited the same thing for Northwestern that it did for Iowa. If Ferentz treated it differently, that's on Ferentz.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, that could be. And I still think that COVID was probably a factor. I'm not saying it was a big enough factor, but you look at how close those games were. I would like to run a simulation, a parallel universe of those games without COVID and see what happens, because if they played anything like they did, if Iowa played anything like they did in the last most of the season, you know, I don't think that those games would have been probably even that close, to be honest. I think they would have won by at least a score. So, I don't know. I think COVID's not COVID. I'm not blaming the virus. I think the way the Big Ten handled everything, I think screwed Iowa worse than other teams, and maybe that's just my bias of being an Iowa fan, but
Well, and remember that because the Big Ten tried to fit the season in 9 weeks total and didn't allow time for postponements, teams like Northwestern that did have a game postponed because Minnesota couldn't get their COVID situation under control, they actually clinched the division, as you'll recall, because they had a game canceled. So yeah, the Big Ten, I blame the Big Ten more than I do COVID for a lot of what's happened this year. And I also think it's ridiculous that Iowa got matched up against Michigan during Champions Week when they should have been matched up against Indiana. That was what we were told. Remember, we were told that during that initial press conference from the Big Ten that they were going to do Champions Week. It was going to be 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, etc. And Iowa matches, they get matched up with Michigan for no reason. Yeah. And the only thing I could think of is the Big Ten is trying to avoid Indiana or Iowa losing because they're afraid that, you know, they're trying to get better bowl placements for both teams, I guess, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because both teams, the contracts are locked. You're not going to get both teams into a New Year's Six Bowl. And by the Big Ten not matching those two teams up against each other, not having that game happen, neither team got in a New Year's Six Bowl. So congratulations, Big Ten. You got Ohio State into the college football playoff, and you've got Iowa into a Music City Bowl that now is canceled. By the way, they would have played 5-5 Missouri, who sucked this year. I think Iowa would have rolled Missouri. Okay, so it would have been a disgraceful bowl matchup anyways. And it got canceled. Indiana deserved to be in a New Year's Six. They lost one game to Ohio State, but because they didn't get to play another game against a quality team, because they didn't beat any quality teams, because there aren't any quality teams in the Big Ten. However, you match them up against Iowa, they would have had another quality win, but because they didn't, a three-loss Iowa State team got into the Fiesta Bowl, and a one-loss Indiana team missed out on the New Year's Six Bowl. So the Big Ten failed in every way imaginable when it comes to scheduling, logistics, and just smarts. I mean, it was terrible. And it's going to be interesting to see moving forward if Kevin Warren and I'll be interested to see what the power struggle is like with Kevin Warren and these presidents, because Kevin Warren obviously got pushed around by these presidents this year, and it certainly didn't help Iowa from an athletic standpoint. Now, hopefully it won't really matter because, you know, theoretically this pandemic, I would think it's going to be over, basically done with. I think we're going to basically be back to normal by next fall. You know, if that's the case, it shouldn't matter. But the Big Ten was disgraceful with how they handled everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's just disappointing because we already knew it was going to be a tough season, but I mean, it just became a total chaotic disaster. And like I said, like you just said, it wasn't just Iowa. Iowa fared pretty well, actually, you know, in a lot of ways. All these teams, a lot of teams. The big one to me was Ohio State, them having to lower the requirement for number of games. I mean, give me a break.
But that requirement should have never been in place in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a total mess. Total mess. I'm not saying what they should have done differently. I'm saying just saying it was a total mess.
Well, I can tell you what they should have done differently. They should have played the season on September 1st. That's what they should have done. They should have played the season in early September and gotten in all the games because they would have had time to postpone like every other conference in the country did. There were cancellations everywhere, but they weren't actually cancellations. They were postponements, and then they made the games up later.
Yeah.
What was the point of waiting until October 24th? Oh, the daily testing. Yeah, how did that daily testing work out for the Big Ten? Did the Big Ten have less games, less contact tracing,
cases,
and less positives because of that? Like, did it help? Like, I heard the big thing heading into the season was, well, they're not going to have to do as much contact tracing. Everything I heard was, well, they've had this many positives and now triple the amount of contact tracing. Okay, so what was the whole point of antigen testing that was theoretically supposed to help eliminate, and I don't want to get into a whole debate on testing, but it was supposed to eliminate contact tracing. It didn't, and the Big Ten failed again. They failed in every way. Every step of the way, they failed. The only thing they got right was returning. Okay, had they not returned at all, that would have been an epic failure. But they returned, and even when they returned, there was talk about them returning October 17th. They go to October 24th. It made no sense. There was plenty of time to prepare. They end up going to the 24th, which again cut out an extra week of the season. But we're going to do a Champions Week. I think like over half of the Champions Week games didn't happen because of COVID. So, you know, the Big Ten, again, this holier than thou mindset, come back to blow, you know, come back to bite them. So, pathetic. So Iowa, I mean, listen, I'm proud of the guys. I think six straight wins, the way they played, I'm proud of Spencer Petras for hanging in there. The wide receivers were very, very unselfish this year. A lot of blocking downfield for a group that was very talented. Running back core is going to be really good next year. I hope Iowa gets Mekhi Sargent. I hope he decides to come back for an extra year because I don't think he's going to be an NFL back. We'll see if that happens or if that doesn't happen. It'd be great. If not, I think they've got a good second string back in Ivory Kelly Martin. And they've got a great offensive line coming back. I haven't heard anything about, you know, from Tyler Linderbaum and Kirk Ferentz of the same thing. He doesn't know of anything. Have any thoughts by Tyler of wanting to leave early. So theoretically, you'll get him back. You'll get Cody Ince back. You'll get Justin Britt back. Maybe get Coy Cronk back. Jack Plum will return. Kallenberger is going to be back. So they just got a lot of pieces on the line that really excelled this year, finally excelled. And, of course, they get a lot of, you know, their running back talent back next year. Maybe we'll get Sargent. We, you know, of course, we don't know, but at least Ivory Kelly Martin and Tyler Goodson are expected to be back. Gavin Williams will be back. And defensively, I just don't worry about him. I mean, Davion Nixon was great, but, you know, Phil Parker just finds a way to breed new guys, whether it's, you know, Davion Nixon or Jaleel Johnson or Drew Ott or A.J. Epinesa. You know, they just find ways to make guys NFL prospects, kind of like the offensive line. I mean, they just I don't know if it's going to be Noah Shannon maybe next year. Austin Schulte, don't know if he'll come back. I think he was a senior, and he had his year limited by injury. Yaya Black is a guy that got some time this year. Maybe he's the next guy at end. You got Joe Evans, John Wagoner back. Zach Van Valkenburg was tremendous. So I just don't worry about Phil Parker. I think Tyler Linderbaum returning would be a bigger deal for Iowa than Davion Nixon returning, as wild as that seems, because Davion Nixon, I saw on a draft board by Mel Kiper, he's projected number 10 overall. Isn't it crazy that Iowa just continues to put first-round draft picks in the NFL? It's almost every year now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a vicious cycle where you know, guys in those positions are looking at Iowa saying, hey, this is a team that is going to give me a good chance to get to the NFL. So I think we'll probably see more of that.
And, you know, I think Iowa has an opportunity next year. It's going to be fun. College football next year is going to be great because you're going to get fans back. You're going to play non-conference. Look at the Cy-Hawk series back. Iowa State should be fantastic again next year. And finally, we'll get to see. I mean, wouldn't it have been great if we could have seen Iowa and Iowa State in a bowl game? Of course, didn't happen, won't happen. Overall, just really proud of these guys. I mean, they just fought their tails off. You know, they gave up a lot to be able to play, and they ought to be proud of their performance, winning six straight. You know, move on to next year and get ready. I mean, this is going to be a team next year. I think just by the looks of it, we're going to look at them and say they're a contender for the West. And I see that being the case for the next couple of years. I don't know how, unless they just have a massive overhaul of the roster somehow, this team is going to be right there in West consideration each of the next couple of years at least. Kirk Ferentz did say today that he is coming back for his 23rd season next year, so he's not retiring or anything. You know, people have talked about it, of course, and so you know we'll see. As far as Iowa sports in general goes, Iowa women's basketball—they've had a couple games postponed here recently, but they should be back here, I think, later in the week in action. How about Matt Gaetans and the Drake Bulldogs? 10-0 on the season with a win today over Indiana State on the road. One of the few Division I teams undefeated. Boy, wouldn't it have been great to see Iowa play Drake this year?
Yeah, it would have been I mean, Iowa already has scheduled, you know, big teams. That would just be another one to add to the mix. But
so, again, we'll hope for a win on Tuesday for the Iowa men. I guess give me a key. We're not going to make picks or anything this evening, but give me a key for Iowa to beat a 3-0 Northwestern team who will be ranked come tomorrow.
Well, I haven't seen them play yet, but
I don't know the last time we could. I don't think I've ever in my lifetime has. I don't think I've ever said a ranked Northwestern team.
Mm-hmm.
Not in basketball.
Yeah, I think this. Obviously, this is not a pushover game, but I think that Iowa needs to use this game as kind of a figuring things out game. I'd like to see them make a lineup change. I already said what it was earlier. I don't know that that's necessary. I don't think it's necessary to beat this team, but I think this would be a good game to kind of get their heads straight and figure out what's going on, because they're not going to have an easy time at all, I don't think, against Rutgers. So, you know, I think they have to play well to beat this team, but I think they want to play really well, so it carries over, mainly on defense.
What's the tougher game? Tuesday home against Northwestern or Saturday at Rutgers?
Rutgers.
You're pretty convinced of that?
I think so.
Well, don't sleep on the Wildcats. That's all I have to say.
Well, I haven't seen them play, so yeah, it'll be kind of a surprise because I don't know what to expect from them, but I don't think Iowa can take anyone lightly at this point, because if they play rotten defense against any of these decently good teams, they're going to have trouble. You know, trying to just outscore other teams is not a fun way to win, I don't think. It's not fun to watch to me. I'm not saying I would prefer to see a defensive-only game, but I think that just seeing trading baskets, something about that is not fun to watch, watching teams trade baskets. It gives me more anxiety than nobody scoring. So I think they got to figure that out on defense. It's just defense. I don't think there's anything on offense. You know, Luka will play better. He didn't play bad, but he didn't have his best game. And he'll play better for sure. I don't really have any problems on offense. It would be nice to see Bohannon start to shoot well. But yeah, it's just defense.
How well is Joe Wieskamp playing? I mean, he, talk about a guy who's improved from last year, struggled much of last year offensively, didn't shoot the ball great on Friday, but you notice he's making plays. I mean, he's making positive plays every game, even when he's not shooting well. And he to me, he's the most improved player on this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy. I think I said earlier, I think he's the best rebounder at his position of anyone on this team. And it's a lot to do with his length. Obviously, he's a fairly tall, long guy, but he's also a great leaper. Like, he's got great athleticism, and he's got good timing. We've seen him get a lot of offensive rebounds lately and a lot of putbacks and three-point plays, which is always nice. And, yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, even not just his offense, and like you said, he didn't really make threes too much this past game, but he's making an impact in other ways also. So he's a guy that I honestly would still like to see more, be more of a focal point for the offense. I think I'd like to see him do a little bit more cutting, and he's not the best, I don't think, at driving, you know, getting past guys. It seems like if I could give him a critique, and this is probably sounds arrogant, but he seems like he swings really wide outside when he's driving to the basket. Like, instead of really going after his defender's hip, he kind of swings it way outside, and he just seems to kind of have trouble getting past guys one-on-one. I think if he maybe just cut, like if you watch CJ Frederick, actually, I think is a better driver in that way, where he drives more of a straight line and a little bit more contact, a little bit lower to the ground. And obviously Wieskamp's a tall, lanky guy, but on that, I would kind of like to see, like, I can't remember what game it was, but I think it was Purdue. Wieskamp catching the ball with his back to the basket and made a nice fadeaway. I thought, I don't think I've ever seen him do that before, but it looked pretty good. I would kind of like to see him do that, because he's got a matchup advantage on a lot of guys that are guarding him, I think. And I would kind of like to see them try that. You know, they run plays for Garza so much, you've gotten used to that, but it'd be kind of nice to see that for Wieskamp. You know, him catch the ball and I don't know, we're inside the 3-point line and go back to the basket. I think seems like he does have some moves. We just haven't seen it too much. So I'd kind of like to see him be more of a focal point on offense. He's he's obviously still doing well, but he's really leaned really heavily on his three-point shot. And he's very good around the basket. Got good feel. So I think they probably could use that a little bit if Garza is a little bit, you know, off or getting triple, double and triple teamed like we've seen. So,
well, but I give Minnesota a ton of credit. They really played well defensively in that first half. I mean, give Iowa credit. They made adjustments. But when I was watching the first half on Friday, I thought, I did not think, well, Iowa's just not playing well offensively. Yeah, Garza missed some bunnies. But I thought Minnesota's rotations were quick. They just were crisp defensively.
Yeah, they definitely played well. And, I mean, they did basically everything right throughout the game. You know, I think they probably could have played a little better yet. But, you know, they played pretty dang well. I think they've got to be ecstatic after playing that game. I mean, especially to come back when you're down a fairly significant margin with very little time left and you do everything right and everything goes right. And then you just, you know, throttle them in overtime. That's got to feel pretty good for them. So they definitely played a really good game.
Yeah. And CJ Frederick, by the way, was spectacular. Did you agree with the last? I did not. Listen, I want Bohannon taking the last second three, even when he's not been shooting well. But he just has that in his blood. I did not like what they drew up on that. I don't know what they drew up. Basically, it was just Bohannon running the court, and he tried to shoot it over Liam Robbins, who's 7 foot. You know, I would have liked to have seen a better play drawn up, but how did you feel about the ball and the shot that Jordan got at the end of regulation?
I don't know. I didn't mind it, I guess.
I didn't mind that it was Jordan. I just wish they could have gotten a better look.
Yeah, you always wish they could. Yeah, I didn't have a big problem with it. I didn't feel good about it. But, you know, it's a tough situation. So.
I think Iowa does need more out of Jack Nungy. I think these last few games, he's been kind of MIA. What have you thought about Jack? Is he kind of hitting a little bit of a slump maybe here?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think he's definitely a guy who should be a bit more of a force inside. You know, he's shown the ability to make some, you know, sweet little hook shots, little baby hooks and whatnot. And especially against smaller guys, he's got, not smaller guys, but anybody shorter than him, he's got a decent physical advantage. So I think he's a guy who could come in there and make a difference. And he's a guy that tends to dissuade people from coming up the lane on defense. You know, I'm not saying he's a great shot blocker, but he definitely, I think, alters shots. And so, yeah, I think he could definitely be more of a factor out there. Yeah. I would also say that I would like to see a little more of Keegan Murray. I think he's a guy that brings some stuff that you tend to need, especially on defense, intangibles. And I'd like to see a little bit more of him. I wish they'd played him more on against Minnesota.
Well, we're going to find out again because it's a gauntlet. And if Iowa can get, you know, maybe this will be, you know, I feel like it, if it was going to happen. But I also was wrong with Petras. I thought after four games, it was enough time and Ferentz needed to at least give someone else. Actually, it was not four games. It was, I want to say it was after the sixth game. I actually gave him six games and he stuck with them. And by game number seven, second half of game number six. No, excuse me. It was after six games that I said they needed to give someone else a shot. And then it was in the second half of game seven where Petras finally started playing like we thought he could. So I could be wrong about this defense, but I think it's a little different when you have a defense that's been struggling for 3 years. And we've been extremely patient, and we're just not seeing a whole lot of difference. But we shall see. Maybe they'll, you know, get their heads on straight defensively and figure this out, because I don't think it's a matter of they don't have the talent to play defense. I just don't believe that. Iowa Northwestern, this Tuesday, 8:07 p.m. Iowa time on Fox Sports 1. Alex, give me, as far as my prediction, before we make our picks, my key to the game for this game is going to be, obviously defense is big, but I could see this being a lower scoring game. Can Garza not only get his, but throw effectively out of those double teams. We saw him struggle a little bit with how Minnesota timed when they were bringing double teams over to him in that first half against Minnesota. It was a little bit difficult for him to get out to open shooters. So if he can be a little bit more decisive with whether he's going to go up or pass out, who he's going to get, who he's going to kick it to, and they can swing it, I think they'll be just fine. But Northwestern is always capable defensively, and they're obviously a lot better with Boo Booey on offense. Kopp is another really talented guy for Northwestern. And then, of course, they've got their big man that battled Garza last year, and his name escapes me. But they've got guys, and they've proven it with a 3-0 record. So give me a final score for Iowa Northwestern on Tuesday.
I'll go Iowa 90, Northwestern 82.
Well, they give up 82 to Northwestern, I'm going to be disappointed. I think they need to hold them under 80. I will go Iowa 82, Northwestern 72. I think Iowa takes care of business pretty handily in this game, even though Northwestern is number one in the conference right now from a record standpoint, conference record. I will go Iowa 82, Northwestern 72. And maybe we can throw in not a key to the game, but a prediction for Rutgers, since we won't be back before the Rutgers game on Saturday, which is at 1 p.m. Iowa time on ESPN2 in Piscataway, which is normally rocking that the rack, as they call it, out in Piscataway, New Jersey. It's usually a tough environment for road teams. But Scarlet Knights are athletic. They're big. They're tough. And Iowa's had problems with them in the past. So give me a prediction for Iowa and the Scarlet Knights.
I think that'll be definitely a tough game. I'll go Iowa 85, Rutgers 83.
I'm going to go Iowa 78. I think Rutgers' defense is elite enough to hold Iowa under 80. I'm going to go Rutgers 78, Iowa 78, Rutgers 80. I think they win that game, and I could be wrong on that. It's just a crapshoot trying to pick some of these games, because anybody could beat anybody on any given night, but I'll go Rutgers 80, Iowa 78, Iowa's second loss, and they'll move to 2-2 in the season. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope Iowa can go 2-0 this week and move to 3-1. Be great, because they'll be right up there, hopefully, with Wisconsin. Wisconsin's undefeated as well in the Big Ten. But Iowa's going to have to play well. And, then, of course, Michigan is right there as well. So Iowa Northwestern on Tuesday night, 8:07 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, and then Iowa at Rutgers, 1 p.m. on ESPN2 this coming Saturday, which is the day after New Year's Day, January 2nd, the Scarlet Knights and the Hawkeyes. Thanks for joining us for week 142 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. We'll be back with week 143 coming up next week. Go Hawks tomorrow. Get a win against Northwestern. And as far as a football team is concerned, don't hang your heads. Be proud. Spectacular end of the season with 6 straight games, and we look forward to the 2021 campaign. We'll talk to you soon. Go Hawks.